So then, but we would appreciate that you don't talk. Hey, Haribol, talk when you go outside, because we're going to continue with questions and answers. So then, yeah, it means that connection, means you take whatever is the nature, and you connect that to Krishna. That's, as Prabhupada mentioned, the secret. We just see what is, many times Prabhupada asks a devotee, what do you want to do for Krishna? Because the idea is you should be enthusiastic, be absorbed in it. So then I think it was Ishan. He probably asked, what do you want to do? And he said, whatever you want me to do. No, what do you want to do? And it kept going back and forth. So finally then Ishan said, I would like to make mridangas. So then he came to India, and I think Bharadvaj and some others, and they started learning how to make clay mridangas. There's even a picture, I think, of Bharadvaj or somebody, you know, pulling on the straps of the mridanga, you know, learning to make them. Very old, you know, here in Mayapur. Then from doing that, then I guess they took them to the West and they figured out, well, there's a problem because you can't maintain them. You don't have the components to maintain them in the West. So he came up with the idea of the plastic mridanga. So then he made the Balaram mridanga, you know. So then that was the whole, so he did something he wanted to do. And so then it came out nice. So there was full absorption. So the idea is do those things that you really want to do. And even if you don't know what to do, then work on authority who can tell you what to do. But in some way, the mind should be engaged, that this is what I want to do, or I'm doing this to please that person. I don't really want to do it, but it makes, you know, Guru happy or the Vaishnavas happy or something. And so then there's some satisfaction in that. And so then you try to do it well. Because if you do something and apply the mind and the intelligence and the, you know, the energy, how to do it nicely, then body, mind, and words are engaged. And that's what we're looking for. That's the perfection. That's the connection. That's what we're trying to do. Because if that's done, it works. Let's see. Punctuality or something. Oh, another. Okay. So basically, that's actually what we're trying to do. So in this, you know, going on and all these things, all it is to make us aware of what is our nature. That we have one. And that, therefore, then there's things that we can do or like to do for Krishna. Generally, we're basically aware of them, but we may not be so clearly aware. So then they're contradictory sometimes, and it creates problems for us. If we're more aware of it, what's important, what's not is so important, then we know how to make our priorities and then engage our nature in Krishna's service. The point is brought up is that the material nature works also on the same principles. It's not different. That it's not different because it's a reflection of the spiritual world. So it still works on the same principle because it's created by Krishna. It is Krishna. It's just inferior form of Krishna. Or the spiritual world, superior form of Krishna. So the principles work without focus, without, you know, basic understanding, without endeavor, and without some faith in something, some faith, nothing works materially or spiritually. So that's has to be without focus, without endeavor, without faith, those three, it doesn't work. Faith is your faith in your result. That's your prayojana. So that's the hladini. So here that's the mode of goodness. Yeah. Your focus means your focus, you know what you're dealing with and all that. That's your sambandha. That's your sandini. But that's also the ignorance. Because you know what material elements you're dealing with. They're ignorance, so you know the ignorance. You know, and that the endeavor is there. That's the chit potency. Or that's the mode of passion. You know, in which you make that's your abhideya. So without having the sambandha abhideya and prayojana, nothing works. In anything, it doesn't matter. You want to brush your teeth, you know, it won't work unless you understand your hand, toothbrush, mouth, toothpaste, how that all goes together. Otherwise, you might have a very clean ear or something, you know. So it's nothing works without those three. And you have to have a faith that you're going to get the result from it and that that result is worth getting. Otherwise, you don't get the enthusiasm to make the endeavor. Without a basic understanding, you know, without that knowledge, you don't want to do the, you don't have faith. You know, and without faith, you don't endeavor. Like that. So that's the thing. When you focus on it, then that develops the faith. The faith makes the endeavor. So that works in anything.
When there's a treasure, someone knows it is there, they need it so much inside you that they don't want to get it. Mm-hmm. How can you get this desire to see in the whole day the same treasure? How can you get there? Get the desire to reach the whole time?
Mm-hmm. No. His point is, the question is this, how do we get the desire? Could you hear? You're all here. He was saying is that when we know there's a treasure that we dig with enthusiasm, and then when we don't know, you know, there's not so much enthusiasm. So we know the holy name, everything is there. So how do we get the enthusiasm to dig for that treasure? Like that. So basically it's a two-pronged approach. One is that we cultivate and know who Krishna is, and that we develop, know who he is, so we have that faith that that's what we want. At the same time, is we have to remove those things that get in the way of our developing that faith. Right? Because we're looking for happiness. So right now we think the happiness will be found in so many different places. And then we're being presented, you know, but at the same time we notice our endeavors to get those happiness don't get our happiness. You know, so therefore then it's seen, well, there's something wrong here. So then when Krishna consciousness points out this, you can't really gain happiness here, you can only gain it in the spiritual world, and here you can only do your best if it's connected to Krishna. Then we try to connect it to Krishna, but still a lot of inspiration is what we're going to get out of the material. You know, means there is always that thing of the mercy and this and that, but a lot of times underlying that is something material. Yes, the dovetailing. Dovetailing means we're dovetailing those things we like, so that means there is some inspiration on the material platform for those things. You know, but it doesn't matter because the things and the material is still Krishna. It's just a matter, is it engaged in Krishna's service or not? That's the point. Prabhupada mentions that there is no, the Lord is present in every particle of all existence. So therefore it's dead matter, but Krishna is still there. So if you see it in connection with Krishna, use it for Krishna, it doesn't matter. You know? Or you can say it isn't matter. You know? It's you're dealing with Krishna. So that's, yeah, he is the, therefore, in that way, we'd say he's the substance. Vastu means that Krishna is the substance. So if it's connected to him, it actually has substance. If it's not connected to him, it doesn't really have any substance. He's still there. He's still making it work. He's still the attractiveness to it. But we're not getting any spiritual benefits, so it's illusory. Because we're thinking it's one thing, but it's another. We're thinking it's the body that's attractive, but actually it's Krishna's attractive. So we're working very hard to impress that boy or girl or this person or that person, you know, for whatever, economic, sensual, or, you know, position or control, whatever it is. And we think that by getting those things we'll enjoy, and through this meeting we'll get it, and we impress that person, we'll get this, and we'll get our work done. But actually all those things are Krishna, but we're not seeing Krishna in it. So then we get no real benefit. When we see Krishna in it, then it removes the need for those things, and then we spiritually develop.
Because Krishna is the substance and the substance.
Yeah. Yeah, because Vishnu is, he's the maintainer, he's everything. Okay. Well, that's okay. Means the doubt is that okay? Then what's attractive is Krishna, but Pankajanga is pointing out if everything's Krishna, what's not attractive is also Krishna. You know, so it's all Krishna. So we only bring that point out because what's attractive to us is generally what we're interested to work with. That's where we put our attention, our intelligence, our mind, our ego. So that's why that's pointed out, because otherwise something else doesn't matter to us. You know, it's just like, so everyone has something that attracts them. So they just can see Krishna through that and engage that in Krishna's service, then it's fine. Because his potency is there, but through the modes of nature, which are also his potencies, then therefore some aspect of it will be more attractive. You know, like we're attracted to the woodwork because, you know, we like something natural. Or that, or we like wood, or we like the, you know, the grain of the wood. A bug is also attractive because it's good food, you know. So like that, it has its different reasons for it, but it's still Krishna. Krishna is food, or Krishna is aesthetics, or someone's attracted to the wood. Not necessarily the wood itself is beautiful, but that someone's using natural things. That's for them. The concept is beautiful. So there's all different levels of what is attractive. You know, it's intellectually, the concept of it, yes, because wood you can use and make into all these shapes, you can do anything with it. So as a concept, then that's very beautiful. You know, or as a management, we got tons of trees, and so wood is very cheap, so therefore we make things out of wood, so then that's, you know, there's some reason for the attraction. So depending upon the modes, you will see, because Krishna is all of that. Krishna is everything, so therefore in each item you have everything about it. You know, it's bad for us, like we see some garbage, and so it's impure and it's bad and it's not beautiful and it's a disgusting mess. But, you know, for the dogs and the jackals and the bugs and the birds, it's great. You know, they're very attractive. You know, so like that, it's Krishna's there in everything, but it's just what is useful for us. So we take that and leave the rest.
Krishna also likes to show himself. Even in nature, the beauty is to show that he's there. Yeah. This wall, when immediately the mind thinks to put something nice to see Krishna, more to be able to see him in all Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's just in the light. By nature, that's why very cultures grow, carving with so much detail, because they are making the mind of Krishna grow there also.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You see, it's white.
Cement.
Ananta. You know, when you're down on Patala Loka, we look up, we see blue skies. They see white skies because it's the white from Ananta Sage. They're so close to Ananta Sage. Yeah. It's just something. Yeah, good point. Yes.
Also, the Sanskrit language actually, whatever is actually Arudas has a name according to the function what it performs. And all these verbs, whatever these functions are there, all these activities are Krishna's pastimes. So, for example, this is a wall, it gives a covering potency of Krishna. Or the table would be the holding, the unfolding potency of Krishna.
You're saying,
So in this way you have connection obviously. In Vedic language, like in English we have no much, it's called Vaal. But in Sanskrit you would see called Vidya, something which is covered, so it's called Upvedika, something which is built up place. Means it keeps the book higher, because the book shuffles to be really that. So then there's a partial aspect, Krishna energy is invested in it, and all this is, it's always connected.
Did you hear that? He was saying that he was making the comment that in Sanskrit language, then every word, I mean, everything that we see like that, then that's a noun and it's based on a verb. And the verb then shows what it does. Like in Sanskrit, wall, then the root means that which covers. You know, because that's what it's doing. Or a table is what holds up. So the Krishna's covering potency is in a wall, Krishna's upholding potency is in a table. So every noun is like that. It's based on some potency of Krishna. So he's just saying it's through that language it's very easy to see Krishna in everything. Because otherwise in English, you know, what does table mean? Or what does wall mean? It doesn't have any specific inherent meaning. But in Sanskrit, then it has a meaning. It actually has a connection to Krishna's potencies or pastimes or activities or something. Krishna's always involved, or existence, like that. So, it's a good point. You had something there? Okay, so a question comes up is that in connecting ourselves, our conditioned nature to Krishna through devotional activities performed according to the Daiva Varnashram. Now what about if someone's so sinful that they don't really fit into the system? So then it appears that from the tradition, then they're just engaged just in the Bhagavad Dharma, just in the chanting the holy name, these direct devotional activities. Because they're so sinful they can't perform the others. So basically that's the system that you're using when those who are from outside of Varnashram take up devotional service. Is that because to perform the Varnashram activities actually requires good qualities. You have to have sense control. You have to have respect. You have to have knowledge. You have to have cleanliness. Like that. You know, you have to have a sense of, you know, you have to be active. You can't be lazy. You have to have a service attitude to, you know, serve others. You have to have tolerance. You have to have patience. If you don't have, you actually can't perform the duties of Varnashram. So then that does mean that the only thing left is performance of the direct devotional activities. So one can either throw yourself into that fully and do that with great conviction. Then one becomes purified, and if the conviction is great enough, one just stays in that platform, one doesn't really bother much with the Varnashram. But that means one doesn't bother. But it doesn't mean you're out making your money, you're doing this, and you're doing that, and you're saying we don't care. Right? That means you're just fully engaged in the Bhagavatam process. You know? And sadhana that's there. You know, in other words, the Bhagavatam, what elements of the sadhana bhakti that we need to engage our conditioned nature. Or one stays in whatever position one's in and engages the fruits of that lifestyle in Krishna's service and performs the Bhagavat when one can. Does that make that sense? You know, the morning, the evening, you chant, you read, then you go to work in the day, you do your work. like that, and the results are then given to Krishna. Does that make sense? It's slower, but it'll also eventually work. Because devotional service is more powerful than material activities. Like that. But with time, then knowledge and detachment come from performing devotional activities. So naturally, then these other elements come up. Then one is able to take them up. So just like very few, you know, especially in Kali Yuga, have the natural qualities to chant Gayatri Mantra. So Gayatri Mantra, because Gayatri, unless the mode of goodness is there, it just basically doesn't work. It's not like Hare Krishna that works whether we understand it or not. Because in the Gayatri Mantra, you basically generally only have three names. You know, so it's not all the syllables are the names. And many, does that make sense? And sometimes the names are even indirect names. So then you may get benefit for having chanted those names. But the point is the effect of the Gayatri Mantra itself may not be obtained. So one only is able to therefore chant by Gayatri by chanting Hare Krishna. By chanting and associating with the devotees rendering service, then the purity of heart comes that one develops the qualities of goodness that one then can chant, be awarded and chant the Gayatri Mantra. So in the same way as then those by then performance of those two, then you know purification continues. Then, if need be, then one has the qualifications to follow Varnashram. Right? Because it's on a lower level. But it comes like that. But to say that Varnashram is not important, that's okay as long as you stick to the Bhagavat and Pancharatrik. You can say Pancharatrik is not important as long as you stick to the Bhagavat. Bhagavat means only chanting Hare Krishna. There's nothing else. Hearing Bhagavatam, hearing and chanting, remembering the Lord, that's it. That's Bhagavat. If you're doing anything else other than just the modes of nature, arranging your eating and this, and you're not even really aware of it, then fine. But if you're doing something else, then that means more has to be there. If you have a conditioned nature, you need Pancharatra. So then as these other desires come up, then the natural way through Varnashram is to engage them, connect them to the Lord. Varnashram is not the goal, it's simply a means to get to the goal, which is love of God. So we have material detail of desire. Varnashram will address it. Pancharatra doesn't. It addresses that you should sleep and you should eat. You should take bath, you should dress properly. It doesn't go beyond that. You know. So more than that, then Varnashram deals with. And if one's not even worried about that, if you eat or sleep or you know, take a bath, then you can just stick to Bhagavad. But as the more material needs come, then it's a natural way to engage. It works good. It does fine. But as you said, it does require qualification. So that's the thing. Even though the holy name is the highest, it requires no qualification. And the Gayatri mantras are lower, but they require qualification. Because they're dealing with the conditioned nature, while the holy name is not. It purifies it, but it's dealing directly with the soul.
So the Varnashram also is sort of not the same category, like Vaishya Shuddha to realize animals, or even Yakshas or only ones are also utilized sometimes.
Yes. You catch that? The point I was making is the Varnashram accommodates everybody. Everybody gets some benefit from it. You know, because the animals are taken care of, even the outcasts are taken care of. Everybody is somehow or another connected with it, though they may not get the full benefit of it. They get some benefit, like that. But the devotional process is so powerful that automatically, basically, one starts to develop the brahminical qualities. So even when we're dealing with varnashram, we're technically dealing in naishkarmya, which means performance of the activities without attachment to result. Then with that, that's specifically, everybody can do it. Like in Satya Yuga, then you'll see that that's not uncommon. Or during the rule of great kings, like when Bhishma Dev was the regent, you know, then people were like that. Everybody did their work without desire for result. They just did it because it's their duty. And the kingdom is most prosperous. You hear about that in Ramachandra's kingdom, you hear, even though it wasn't in Satya Yuga. Yeah, no, that happened. Because if everybody performs their duty to their best, then everything's prosperous. But if people don't perform it to their best, then the result is less. So there's less prosperity. So making the point that things will be prosperous when there's good reciprocation. So also the Vedic concept is varnashram means relationships. That's actually what it is. Generally, it tends to be looked at by most as an economic or social system, with economics being the prominent thing. And even that, it's not clearly looked at. You know, it's like varnashram means plowing the field with cows and growing, you know, grains and vegetables. That's varnashram. But that's part of varnashram. Because the point is you have to sell that to somebody, or everybody's got to be a farmer, you know. But generally we see is that you have to have kings. Kings require armies. That means you need cities, you need roads, you need so many different things. And you know, with human life needs refinement, so you need clothes, and those are fine. You need ornaments, you need utensils, you need that. So that didn't come from the farming. You plowed the field, you didn't get a cooking pot, you didn't get a sari. You know, so it is the central feature, but it's not the whole thing. So many times, then either it's looked at as a management system, who's in charge, or it's looked at as an economic system, but it's not looked at as a system of relationships. Someone who knows how to perform economics, how does he deal with his labors, his, you know, administration above him, and those who guide him? That's varnashram. Yeah, there's somebody down. How does someone who is an administrator deal with those who are able to generate economics, those who are able to assist them, assist him, and his guides? How does a teacher deal with those who are in administration, or those in economics, or those in the arts? Right? How does a grihastha deal with a brahmachari? Brahmachari with a grihastha, the vanaprastha sannyas. How do they deal? How does a grihastha, you know, administrator deal with a brahmachari vaishya, or a brahmachari kshatriya, or a brahmachari brahmin? Or how does he deal with an old man who's a shudra? Or, you know, so all these things, it's whatever there is, options there are in relationships in human society, varnashram defines that, so you know how to interact. Because otherwise, how do we know what's a mother, right? Modern society, one's a girl, one's out there enjoying herself, and then in the process of enjoying, one day she's a mother, right? But where is her training? She doesn't know what a mother is. She had one. She used to fight with her. You know, she was always trying to be independent and do her thing. You know, and then now she's one. So all she knows about being a mother is how to get away from it. So it means in the inverse, she'll know how to be attached to it with something that's trying to get away from you. Right? So therefore, her child doesn't listen to her, and she can't affect discipline, because she wasn't disciplined with her mother. But she has the attachment of her mother and the desire to do something for her mother, but she has her own inherent thing of not knowing, doesn't have that respect or how to work with authority. That's therefore her child will have the same. Right? Because it's rasa. You go up to somebody, you're nice, they're nice back to you. You come up angry, they become angry with you. So in the same way as you don't know how to deal with authority, they don't know how to deal with you. So the child that doesn't know how to deal with the parent, when they get big, they as a parent, the child won't know, their child won't know how to deal with them. Yeah, yeah. I mean, these things are arranged. It means it's just there scientifically. Then that's the mechanics of how you get it done. You know, but how do you say? Yeah, that's the. But the point is they don't know. So their attachment is what makes them a parent. It's what makes anybody. You're a friend because you're attached to the person. I'm the owner of my car because I'm attached to it. You know, when I'm not attached, I don't care if I'm the owner or not. Yeah, it's mine, who cares? It sits in the backyard and composts, you know. But it's attachment that makes the relationship. But the point is the attachment needs to, you need to know the science of how to apply it. Otherwise, everybody's got attachment, and therefore there's going to be overlap. You know, the problem is example of throwing many, many pebbles in a pond, then all those circles will bump into each other. So varnashram is to know how to drop one rock in the center, and then which ring you are, and how you relate to all the other rings. That's varnashram. And when we don't use it, then we just end up with all these things. And then more civilized society, or even not, even all anything that you can call an organized society, even if it's aboriginal, they have a structure of how everybody relates to each other. How to be, that is the trick. The question is that's the $64 million question. Because how to not be attached, but to care. That's the whole point of the Gita. Well, let's say the major point, the Naishkarmya. This is what Narad Muni preaches. Because this is something we've never done before. That's why Bhakti Yoga is so bewildering to living entities. You know, the common person, the intellectuals alike, both. It's bewildering to everybody. Because we can relate to karma. I do the activity, I get the fruit, that's why I work. Or the intellectual is detached. I don't want the fruit because I don't want to be here in the material world, so therefore I don't do the activity. Right? Because activity gets fruit. I don't want fruit, I don't do activity. Yeah, no relation, whatever. Because you can take it, apply it wherever you like. You know, you do something that you'll get economic benefit, or you get emotional benefit, or sensual benefit, or you'll get liberation from it. You know, by performing no activity, I'll get liberation. By performing activity, I'll get dharma arthakama. By no activity, I'll get moksha. So we can relate to one or the other. But Bhakti Krishna is saying, perform your duties, your karma, but not for yourself, to please Krishna. Because if you're pleasing Krishna, if you're detached, you don't care if you do it or not. Right? Means the person who is detached from the material world, it doesn't matter if he performs material activities. I mean, I cannot say material, but activities within the material world. Right? Means Arjuna is, Duryodhana is performing his activities based on economic gain. So you see, his first half of the first chapter is all economics. It's all niti shastra. Right? Diplomacy and all these different things. But then Arjuna, he's coming in from the platform of the kshatriya from dharma. He's saying, if we have this war, then dharma will be lost. And Krishna, so it's a higher principle. So he's saying, Duryodhana, they'll do, they're on a lower word, you know, walking on the religious platform. Krishna says, you're a fool. Then he explains the science of the soul and how we're not the body and all this and that. And then at the end he says, do your work for him. Yeah. So then Arjuna is bewildered. He says, how is that? It appears that it's contradictory. You know, I understand the knowledge, I don't work. or I work because I want the fruit. What Krishna is pointing out is that everything is done for a result. But the point is that result is not ours. That's the mistake. We're working to get a result because we think it's ours. As soon as we think the result's not ours, then we don't want to work. But the point is the result was never ours in the beginning. We just have claimed it as ours. It's God's. So that's where the mistake is. So now Krishna is saying, now do your work, but do it to please Him. So the result's for Him. But to do that, you need knowledge. So knowledge means there's detachment, because the two go together. Knowledge, as soon as you analyze something intellectually, it loses something. You know? When you don't analyze, it's just the mind, then it seems great. You know, but at one point, then obstacle after a while, there's something wrong. And so then you just think it's the thing, and you throw that out and go for the next one. Yeah. But, yeah, so knowledge removes the illusion. So the difficulty comes is that in that bridge between being inspired because of the fruit we'll get and working on the taste that it's pleasing to Krishna, that spot in between, that aspect is called nishta. That's where the difficulty comes. Because though one's fixed in one's service, but one doesn't have the taste that one has in ruchi. But one doesn't have the inspiration to do activities like one does before in anartha nivritti. Because before that you're working because you're anarthas. But here the anarthas have been purified. But the taste the prominent taste hasn't come. So that's like a platform of like liberation. One's not fully in the spiritual, but one's not in the material. So it's like a reflection of Brahma Bhuta, where one's not in conditioned life, but one's not in prema. So that's bhava bhakti. So there's similarities between bhava and nishta. But one's with ecstasy and one's without. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's why the cultivation of knowledge is important, because, you know, or contemplation, because then we're performing the activity, we should be open to the idea that there may be some material motive from our part, but that doesn't mean we stop the activity. You know, unless it's unnecessary. Just like, okay, one goes into grihastha life, there's attachment, one goes this, for wife, for children, for money, for home, for this, for that. So many things, but then kind of near the end of it, then one starts to see is one's done it well, one's, you know, all the duties were performed, but what as a youth one thought one would gain, that satisfaction doesn't exist. So the only thing that really remains is that satisfaction, it's been done nicely for Krishna. So actually it's the devotional aspect is what's real and the other's not. But it doesn't mean that at that moment it's given up unless the duties are finished. You know, the children are situated, the wife's situated, everything's taken care of, and then one can move on from it. Because one wants to make sure, that's when you know, when you can work with the thing that you're detached from without attachment, then you know you can work without it. Yeah. Yeah, so the idea is that you're caring because it's Krishna's service. The wife is Krishna's devotee. The children are Krishna's children. Not because they're my children, or my wife, or my money, or my house. No, it's Krishna's house, so therefore we have to take care of it. It's Krishna's clothes. We have to wear them nicely and take care of them properly. It's Krishna's body, therefore we take care of it. It's not ours. So Krishna likes it clean, so we bathe it. We're not bathing because we want to be clean and impress people. Like that. So one always has to watch, because there comes this time in between where one is meticulous about all these personal things, but then there comes a point where one's not as meticulous because one doesn't care. So that's okay. That's a good sign. So many times Prabhupada wouldn't mind that devotees would overemphasize these things and the detachment, the renunciation, and the talking strong about, you know, brahmacharya or that, because then it's an identity and it creates the conviction in that area. But eventually it's got to come that it doesn't really matter. You know, it's just like you had the thing where the brahmacharis were complaining about the ladies chanting japa in the temple. Prabhupada says, you know, you want no ladies, go to the forest. You know, like that, is that it has to come eventually to the point where it doesn't matter if women are there or not, because you're chanting Hare Krishna. What does it matter if they're there? So it eventually has to come to that. So the point is that it's Krishna's, therefore we care. Because it's our duty, and we have to do our duty well. And from doing the duty, now someone might bring up the objection, well, in that state it's dry. But actually it's not. That's where actually the emotions are tasted. That's the problem with the material world, is whatever we think it is, it's not. It's the opposite. Right? We think we'll enjoy by enjoying. No, we enjoy by austerity. By austerity, then you get enjoyment. But by enjoying enjoyment, you lose enjoyment. Just like by austerity we get money, but by spending money we lose it. You know? So therefore it's the opposite of what we think it is. So by detachment from something and by sense control, that's actually where you taste the emotional taste that one is actually looking for. Like one goes into family life for basic certain emotional exchanges and different things like this. But they're only tasted when there's detachment. When attachment is there, they can't be tasted because I say the attachment overrules and we don't deal correctly. You know, it's just like one wants to do, let's say one wants to eat. So now, and all the other family members want to eat. So if we just go in there and put the pot down and everyone just gets something to eat and, you know, as they like, when they like, goes off and sits and eats and does what, you know, someone's watching the video, someone's listening to music, someone's over, you know, playing with the computer, and they're all eating, then where is the interaction? You know? It's not. You know, and everyone takes what they like, when they like, how they like. Then it doesn't work so nicely. But you create restriction where you require sense control. Then they have to come at the same time, sit down in an orderly fashion, eat in a particular way, there's particular conversation, particular interaction. Then you actually taste the flavor of sitting with the family and interacting. So that's the thing, is through sense control, then you appreciate it. Or like if you eat, if you take it nicely, eat, taste, that's nice. If you just go in there and just gobble and stuff it in your mouth and rub it, you're not going to notice it. You know, like they say, you taste the food or you wolf it. Wolves aren't known as connoisseurs. Yeah. So that's the point, is that through restriction you actually taste what you're looking for. That's why we see in the emotional interaction between the members of the Varnashram system, as given in the Vedic literatures, generally is so much greater and is of a higher nature than we generally see in modern society. You hear about it in books, you see it in movies, you sometimes occasionally bump into it directly, but it's generally more rare, where the situation was such where that mood of detachment and working for others was right, that it created an impression. So the principle then is that if that detachment is there through knowledge, and then one is dutiful and one performs one's service for the pleasure of Guru, Krishna and the Vaishnavas, then whatever you want to taste spiritually or materially, that will be gained. But if one does one's own thing, then what one will taste will be greatly reduced, both spiritually and materially.
Renunciation of the material, you should not spend it.
Yeah.
Krishna called the Vaishnava process, we also have to restrict the taste of the renunciation to a particular higher level, which is a natural way, like I said, from making.
Second, I mean, to use it, or it just comes?
To use the other renunciation of the taste, we just enjoy the taste.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, here's a very good point. Is that we perform by renunciation, then one gets potency. The austerity brings result, and that result then can be enjoyed, or are they used for further, like that? The thing is, it's both, but how it's done is different from what we think. We think, okay, I performed austerity, and from that I've gotten facility. Now, then that seems to me it opens two paths. One, I could enjoy that facility, or I could continue being renounced and just neglect that facility and go on and gain more facility, more spiritual. But what Krishna's mentioning is the same as both, but different from both, and it's the combination. Is that we're engaging the activity that you would do to enjoy it, but we're doing it in the spirit of renunciation. So that's what we're not used to. No one's ever told us anything like that before. It's unheard of in the material world. You know, from you know, the top down, no one's heard of, you know, you either perform the activity to enjoy it or renounce it to get something higher. But here you are performing the activity to not enjoy it and to get something higher. So that is the thing. So that's why it's very important. Otherwise, that's we see is that we do something, and then from that we many times develop good qualities. Then we may try to enjoy those good qualities. Then we lose them. So that's why this is what do you call it? The difficulty, the nature of being energy.
So many sannyasis have enjoyed the results of their austerity, and unfortunately, don't even notice.
Yeah, well, that's there. How to maintain? Okay. So then the question is how to maintain. Many sannyasis, they've enjoyed the fruits, and then don't. Let's call it, that's taranga rangini. That's there. It's there for everyone. That's most obvious there because the contrast is the greatest. But it's still the same principle. You know, it's there for. It's just that you give the Vedas will give the example where it's the most full. You know, it's just like, let's say we want to describe serving prasad. It's easiest to describe serving a feast. Because everything that there is there, you know, you have guests, you have seating arrangements, you have volume, you have serving utensils, you have to deal with your different levels of who's there, you have the most variety of preparations. So by explaining that one thing, anything that you do ever want to know about serving any kind of food is there. Okay, in a feast you have bitter, you have salties, you have sweets, you have, you know, drinks, you have the, so let's say we have a snack, but the order is the same, the salty comes here, the sweet comes there, so the snack, you have one salty, one sweet, okay, so then you know the order, you know, and you know basically, so like you're saying, it's just everything lowers and contains, so in the same way, if you show the principle of renunciation from the platform of sannyas, it's the contrast is the greatest, so you see its aspect the most broadly applied. At the same time, as that's to be applied by everyone. The grihastha is also supposed to be detached in performance of duties, and that's where the kindness comes. Krishna is detached from everything, but he reciprocates with how he's reciprocated with. That's the kindness. Yes. Krishna is pleased with the more one gives up, the more he's pleased, because that's because he's detached from everything. He's not attached to anything. Right? He's attached to the rasa of interacting.